Oh, hey, Kate.
Hello, hello. I've been thinking about things and thoughts. How are you doing?
Okay. This is quite a day that I'm having today, so it should make for a fabulous Unrolled podcast. Not that all of the Unrolled podcasts aren't fabulous all the time, except when they aren't. Yeah. How are you doing?
I am confused, bothered, and bewildered. Is that the song? Confused, bothered, and bewildered.
I don't believe confused is the first part of
That's
it should be. You should rewrite it now.
the name of the episode, by the way.
Confused, bothered, and
Bothered and
bewildered.
bewildered.
There we
Yeah.
go, right off the bat.
I am fresh off a camping trip. I went with
Ooh.
the brilliant Claire Moore. She's the yoga teacher and also the founder of Plants and Provisions. It's like chefery and herbalism. So her and I went scurrying into the woods with Frankie, and it was wonderful. And here was my takeaway about camping with a toddler. It's best to be confident about the weather. It's also best to bring matches if you plan on building a fire. But if you don't have matches and you happen to have, what is it called? Flint or a ferro rod? A ferro rod, I think. Anyways, I started my very first fire without matches.
Oh, cute.
And this is thanks to David McGone's training
Oh,
in
that's right.
how to be a wilderness witch bitch, which is actually trademarked. He has it on his website, How to Be a Wilderness Witch Bitch. Look it up. Look it up. I'm just kidding, he doesn't.
You will.
Anyways, so what I did is I had a little bit of jute that I peeled apart into like a nest, which I then placed atop two tampons, which I placed atop a bed of chaotic twigs and pine, which I placed atop the logs. And 20 minutes later, I got that fucking thing burning. And I was so proud. And Frankie was like, "Mummy, candle, mummy, candle." She was proud of me. I
This is
did it.
amazing. This is amazing.
So long story short, fire building, I had a great weekend learning how to do that. And then it got really freaking cold. And it worked out. And then it was raining, but I had a good tent and we were fine. And I found a crow skull,
Ooh.
which I wanted to take home. But Claire was like, "Kate, you don't have to take home every reminder of death that you find." And I was like, "That's fair."
That's
And
fair. That's fair.
Claire cooks with ghee. I don't know if you eat ghee. Do you
I
eat
do.
ghee?
I do eat ghee.
God damn, it's good.
Yes.
It's like smoky, umami, salty
Yeah.
god sex.
Yes.
So,
There you have it.
there you have
Oh,
it.
I graduated.
Yeah, can we talk about that?
Yeah, it's. I was like, I did something this weekend. What did I do this weekend? Oh, yeah, I'm no longer in school. Thank you for being gone. So yeah, the last week of school was all focused around sports massage, which was basically just like hitting folks.
Yeah. Ooh, I want that.
Well, it was actually like really especially the nights we were at school, it was really awful because you were basically giving someone a routine that you might give them before, they run a marathon or something like that. And then you, in fact, did not run a marathon. You went home and tried to go to bed. So each night I was like up till like 4 in the morning being like, I should go do something. So, yeah, it was an interesting last week, but I'm so glad it's over. And I started filling out the mild mountain of paperwork and insurance stuff, and on my way to being able to put all this behind, and move forward in new and exciting ways. So, And everyone,
well,
I was actually.
Huge congratulations
oh,
on that.
So, the big news this week, talk about transitions, was the blasting of all of our Instagrams with news about the potential unionizing of Yoga Works employees in New York. I have so many thoughts. But I'm just wondering if you'd like to go just jump in with a with yours.
I really have so many thoughts too. And my first, I'm gonna tell you about the barrage of emotions I had in a short period of time.
Fair, but, that's great.
The first one was joy. I am by and large pro-union. I am pro-labor. I am pro-organization. I temper that with my complicated feelings about yoga teaching as a profession, period.
Yeah.
Just period. But by and large, my gut is like, this is the right action, and the result of which will be something beneficial. The conversations it will force will be beneficial.
Absolutely.
How we approach how people get paid to do this work, this will be meaningful. And I am grateful for the bravery that it takes to do this work. And I am in full support, especially now that we are in the Core Power Yoga Works avenue. Like, this is designed to protect against corporations that do not have the best interest of their employees in mind. They absolutely
yeah.
do not. And that is deeply un-yogic.
Yeah.
That is in direct conflict with the work that we are trying to do and the work we're trying to share with our students. So good for fucking them. And, sign the card.
Yeah.
You go.
So I also had a complicated cascade of emotions. The first of which was joy seems like a strong word, but was like, it was just like, yes, this should be something that teachers are allowed to do. My second thought was, much more complicated, because there is such, okay, so there's thoughts from a yoga teacher perspective, there's thoughts from a studio director perspective. So from the yoga teacher perspective, I often wonder, all of this talk of unionizing, part of what a union does is negotiate with the management. And so while there might be things that the teachers are able to secure for themselves in terms of rights, in terms of a clear pathway to I don't know that promotion is the right term, but like a clear trajectory within the relationship with the company, a clear set of like pay raises that might arise. I could think of something even just like, some marginal increase in pay the longer that you've been at the company, that's just like baseline guaranteed or something like that. Things like that, I think you could get. But then also, the management gets to make demands too. That's how this works.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not sure how many teachers out there are going to love being docked every time they show up late for class, are going to love being having classes taken away from them every time they sub more than the agreed upon limit. Outside of extenuating circumstances, of course. I'm not talking about like sick, like subbing because you're sick or subbing because you're doing a teacher training or something like that. I'm talking about just like haphazard subbing. Is there a way to support the people who are wanting to make the teaching of yoga a livelihood? I hesitate to say profession, but a livelihood. And also support the people who are just passionate yoga practitioners who teach now and again. Because I worry that, this could be really good, but it also could lead to a lot of difficulty down the line. And it just all depends on how each individual instance of unionizing goes down, right? And the tricky thing is that the yoga industry is not a standard. I hate that I use the word yoga industry, that it's not a standard labor situation. Do you know what I'm saying? Like it's irregular in the way that we get paid for the work that we do at other studios. And it's not saying that it's a bad thing, but it makes a labor agreement tricky. And so that's why I really think there has to be a lot of like careful conversations about what is wanted, and also room for the possibility that like the organizations and the studios and the teachers at the studios who want to organize, I want them to feel like they can organize and advocate for themselves. But I also, like myself, I don't want to work for anybody else if I can avoid it. In an ideal world, I also wouldn't really be employing as many people as I am, but like the size of the studio that I have and the schedule that we have just requires that I do that. But there is some part of me that's like, no, like part of being a yoga teacher is the directness of the exchange. And when we get these yoga works in the mix and we get the core powers in the mix, even if they were to unionize and be like a wonderful job to work at, like there's still going to be a need and still going to be a feel to the just like someone renting a little space and doing their own thing that, like I don't want to go away. Not even like selfishly for myself, but I just don't want that to go away. And I don't think that it has to with unionization, but there is a part of me that like, are we giving more power to a company that might not exist in 2 years? Anyway.
How it, I don't understand the power that we'd be giving them.
Well, if say there's a great labor agreement that comes about between Yoga Works and say it spreads. I still don't think that in the grand scheme of things, having a player like Yoga Works and Core Power in the world is really an expression of yoga. I just don't think it is. I think, it's a commodification of yoga. They're trying to sell a product, and the teachers are the product, really. They need to understand that better, and therefore the unionization process might help them to understand it better, though I don't think they're going to take kindly to it. And like, I feel like there are other ways to get what we want. Within the context of, I guess this is what I'm saying. This is what I'm trying to circle in around. I would like these conversations to be happening with local independent studios, trying to figure out how the teachers at the local independent studios, the studio owners, and the communities who are practicing there can make this profession something that can move forward, and make it actually be someone's livelihood. More so than I would like to see.
Why can't we just be like, look, if you're like, you just want to teach a couple classes, you go teach that at independent studios. Like, that's what you do. But people that are like, and I'm not going to argue with you, this is, you know, the commodification of the idea of a hologram of yoga, what we're doing at Core Power and Yoga Works. So why don't we just let them unionize and at least protect the people that are venturing into that territory?
Oh, no. Totally. I totally agree with that. Both things can happen at the same time. I don't think by any means that having a union is going to destroy the local independent yoga studio. I don't think that can actually happen. I mean, real estate prices can make that happen, but a union won't. But I don't know. I just, there's...
So we are in complete agreement. There is no downside to this.
No, there's no downside to it, but we have to be, the way that it's being talked about is a little bit disingenuous, I feel. Because there's all this talk of, at least in the people that I've heard, is talk, like, there's this constant refrain of, like, we are the ones creating the community, we are the ones, and I don't know that you can really have a yoga community that's based around people buying things.
Isn't that interesting?
That's why I'm always hesitant to use the word.
Community?
And I don't, in relation to yoga. And I don't know that, like, I just listened to a couple of podcasts with a few of the teachers who are advocating for the union process in New York. And they just kept talking community. And I'm like, I've never been to their class. I've never set foot in those New York Yoga Works studios, but like, I feel like to just say that Yoga Works is a giant corporation that doesn't really understand what's going on in their studios and doesn't really value the working conditions of the teachers, and that we would like to make that better, I think that's enough. you don't have to go on the whole like, oh, but we're this wonderful yoga community. And maybe within the context of that person's class in there every week, it does feel very much like a community, but you lose a sense of it actually feeling like a community the second that it's owned by a giant, you know, national corporation. And I say that from personal experience of having been there on whatever, like September 9th or whatever it was, 2015, and then walking in there on September 10th and it being Yoga Works and being like, wow, some of the life got sucked out of this place. And so, you know, a lot of this is more wrapped up in the Yoga Works-ness of it all than it is about the unionizing of it all. I think what what I'm wanting is like a real nuanced conversation about what teachers actually want and what the agreements are, like studio to studio. Like I would love to be able to snap my fingers and make all of my teachers benefited employees and everything like that, but it's a small studio. I can't, like, there's just not enough room on the schedule to give people enough work to make that happen. Unless I like cut the teaching staff down to three folks, which I think is to the detriment of the students practicing. And I know that some teachers really value their independent contractor status. Like, the ability, the freedom on the teacher's end to be like, oh, I gotta go. Sorry. And like have no real repercussions for it. Like some people want that. Like if a studio asked me whether I wanted to be an employer or an independent contractor, it's really sort of like, well, whatever. Doesn't really matter to me. I'll go with whatever the rest of the studio is doing. I think, I was just thinking about things like, so if we're valuing a class at X number of dollars, right? How do we calculate what the labor is for that class? Is the labor the amount of time you are physically in the studio? Or is the labor some sort of include some sort of preparation for that class? Because a lot of teachers don't really do anything in the way of prep. Like what is the job has to be decided first before there can be a conversation about what a labor agreement might look like. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. I think the thing that I get really grumpy about is things like, studios expecting you to secure your own subs and the amount of time that that takes. And just straddling the line between employees and contractors and, places like YogaWorks and Core Power kind of picking what, talking out of both sides of their mouth in that department. I value clarity in those expectations. And
Absolutely,
I
absolutely.
think that there should be a pay rate for for the work that happens outside of the studio. And most studios expect you to be there 15 minutes early to do some amount of cleanup or setup, and then 15 minutes afterwards,
Now,
clean up, set up.
here's the question with that though. So if you are getting paid for some work that you're doing outside of the studio, including preparing for class, does the studio own that intellectual property? Because in most industries, the answer would be yes.
Well, this is where it gets tricky, is defining what class prep is, because like you said, some teachers don't and
Yes.
some teachers do. So I think that the real question isn't do they own the prep, but do they own what happens in the classroom? So if they were to start having like video recording devices in the classroom, which I'm sure some studios have, would they then own the intellectual practice of anything that was said, performed, or facilitated in the room?
Yeah.
That to me is a really terrifying and interesting question.
Yeah. I
But I
also
think
feel like,
arguably they would own that.
yeah. And so like, that's where the union thing could get a little bit tricky, 'cause that might be something that a corporation that, to be perfectly honest, doesn't really care about yoga in the first place, other than as a product, like it's gonna be two groups of people coming from very, very different standpoints, which might end up being facilitating a great agreement and a great conversation. But like, I am just really wary about entering into an agreement about yoga with people who don't really understand yoga and aren't really willing to listen. So that's the thing that kept coming up. Because whoever's at the head of the ship in any studio, that sets the tone for the whole studio, for the whole company. And I've seen that time and time again. It's whoever's at the helm, even if they're like completely invisible to the student, they set the tone for the whole studio. Their practice or lack thereof sets the tone for the whole studio. And like,
I mean, then what does that say about YogaWorks?
I think that's accurate.
So then what's the tone of YogaWorks if we don't really even know who's at the helm?
Oh, I know who's at the helm. We all do. It's publicly known who's at the helm.
I know, but it's like a non.
Yeah. It means that it's operating in the same way that a SoulCycle or a spinning studio, or like the benefit, and this is not to knock spinning because I actually really enjoy,
Enjoy it.
but like the benefit of a spinning studio is like it is a discrete product. Like it is very clear what's going to happen in that classroom when you step into it, right? Like you're not going to walk in and the teacher's going to randomly decide that you're not going to get on the bike today. It's just not going to happen. It's a very discreet 45 minute. Is it 45 minutes? That sounds right. Thing with some variability based on the personality of the teacher, but like you're going in there and you're getting a clear product, and then you're paying for it and then walking out and leaving. So that is the business side benefit to something like that. But when you try to duplicate that in a yoga space, the variables are just so much broader, unless there's like a studio that's advocating for a set sequence every time you walk in the room. I'm not against that there being, I actually think that Core Power, despite what some of the things about their business practices are, which was, not very great. I think from a business perspective, to have a set sequence of events that is going on so that people understand what they're walking into is really, really smart. And that can be scaled effectively because it's a set series of events that's happening, with some variability, of course, based on the personality and the teacher. So I guess after my moment of yes, of course, yoga teachers should have a union, then my next thought was like, oh, are we just conceding that this is all going to be like national and multinational corporations that are going to be handling the yoga profession from now on? Like that was my second thought. It's not necessarily a rational thought, but that's where my mind went. Because it's true that YogaWorks can pay more than most other studios can. It's just, at least in Boston. I don't know about other places. But I still, time and time again, end up not teaching there because it's not very fulfilling from a yoga point of view. And these teachers in New York obviously have a different sense of that, because they're wanting to stay there and wanting to work it out with YogaWorks through these channels, and I think that that's great and wonderful. I'm just curious about like I've seen so many responses that have been like 100% yes, like Instagram posting about it all day long, and then a couple posts that have been like 100% no, and very little in the middle, and that always worries me.
I don't see how it would affect or harm independent yoga studios.
I
Am I
don't.
missing something?
No. I don't think it would. I just think that the nuance of the conversation is Like, I almost wonder whether it's actually beneficial. Like, it's obviously beneficial to the teachers that are at YogaWorks and trying to unionize. Like, they've decided it's within their best interest. But part of me wonders whether, as a like separate conversation, there needs to be a broader, like, this is what it is to be a yoga teacher as your livelihood. And, like, what are we needing? What are we missing? How can we solve for these problems? How can we sort of define what it is in modern culture to be a quote-unquote yoga teacher? And then decide, like, okay. Like, I always do this calculation in my head. If I were to teach 8 public classes a week, how much would I need for, 46 weeks out of the year? How much money would I need to get paid per class in order to just make it a living on that? And it's quite a bit more than what most studios are paying. Unless you're on in some sort of attendance scale and your classes are like mat to mat. But still, I would imagine it's quite a bit more than what most studios are paying. It comes out to like 112, I think, something like that, per class.
Yeah, and that to me seems like a totally reasonable...
reasonable amount of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing of, like... the other thing that you and I have talked about many, many, many times is, like, how do you reward teachers for cultivating a community and welcoming students, and therefore those students come back? So how do you reward a teacher for that while also acknowledging that there are going to be programs at the studio that aren't, the benefit of them is not for revenue purposes. The benefit of them is for the yoga. Right? And, as someone who prefers and like enjoys teaching like smaller group classes, like I think it's actually a harder task to teach a small group of people.
Yeah, it is.
And so, like, how do we factor that into what the quote-unquote labor actually is of being a yoga teacher? And how much are we expecting folks to do workshops and teacher trainings? I would love if people could get paid enough from teaching public classes so that we wouldn't be on this fucking teacher training bandwagon all the damn time.
For every yoga teacher, there are two in teacher training currently. Yeah.
Like, that would be fucking amazing.
I just don't know that it's such a bad thing. It's just like, I think of the 200-hour teacher training as camp yoga. It's like,
yeah, but then shouldn't it just be like
camp yoga?
Bill, does that? Maybe.
No, it's step one in a journey to eventually be able to facilitate a class.
Yeah, but it's never billed that way.
I think it is. I think people know.
Or are some people going in thinking they're going to get a job right after?
Well, shame on them for not doing their research.
it's just, it's so complex because the yoga industry is so varied and I don't know, I just... It's obviously a necessary solution to deal with the bigger players in the industry. And it just also sends my mind to, it's like, oh, wow, like, what could we actually do on the more independent level to, like, even the playing field a little bit? And, like, and Jay talks about this all the time on his podcast, like, employee-owned yoga centers and, or collectives where people are buying it, like, I don't know. There's just like, and yes, some of those models are like based on real estate, sort of unrealistic, right? But it feels like one aspect of change that is necessary, and the union part, that is. But I feel like there are also so many other corners that of change that are necessary, to, make this really truly a livelihood that people can, not make a shit ton of money on, but at least like own a house and or an apartment if they want and pay the fucking bills. You know what I mean? Like, and also be open to folks who like enjoy doing another job and also like to teach yoga once or twice a week. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so many factors that it just
Well,
sends my
so
head spinning.
also, like, there's no reason that that couldn't be accommodated in the agreement. So people that want to teach two
Oh
classes are
yeah, no.
supposed to.
I'm not saying that it couldn't. I'm just, it. But this is what I don't want to happen, is that there starts becoming so much of a buy-in to become a yoga teacher in the first place that like you don't have those folks who are, really able to just like do it just as a side passion, because the buy-in of the time, either to become like, imagine if everyone, like if Yoga Alliance snapped their fingers tomorrow and said everyone needs 1,000 hours of training in order to teach a class. Like the buy-in to that would be so ridiculous that like probably nobody could make a living doing anything other than trying to sell a few people who can afford to do that type of training to do it, right? So there's
Yeah, and
just
then a
like,
bunch of teachers would be like, fuck this. Yeah.
exactly. So there's like, it's just this like very delicate tipping of the scales, and I feel like this is part of it. I also had the thought in thinking about this of like, because some of the demands included like a clarity around like health insurance and time off and things like that, and I agree that that's necessary. But then I also thought, like, couldn't like Yoga Alliance like drop half the crap that they're doing and just go negotiate for like a really good cheap health insurance option for yoga teachers with one of the big companies and make that a benefit of being a member? Like, couldn't we just like work on that tomorrow?
I don't know that it's enough.
I know it's not enough, but I'm just saying that like there are
And
there
don't they already have that?
No, not for health insurance. Not in my understanding.
Well, it's just expensive. You mean
Yeah.
what they offer is too expensive?
I'm not even sure they offer it though. I could be wrong. I will check on the site right now. I don't know. I just it's like it's a really important conversation. It's just so, hold on, discounts here. Insurance. No, it's just the insurance for, what do you call it? Teachers and studios. Not any sort of like health or anything like that. At least not on their site at the moment. I don't know. There's always going to be big actors in the marketplace. There's always going to be, if it's not YogaWorks and not Core Power, then some other company's going to come up and take that mantle. Like that's always going to be a reality. And there's also always going to be the reality of like the hole in the wall yoga studio with the person just like teaching Mysore out of a storefront. And like, yes, my personal preference is the guy teaching a Mysore room out of a storefront. But, you know, there's just got to be room for all of that. And I, which is not to say that a union makes that not possible. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just in the broader conversation that that sparks about what is it to actually be a yoga teacher and attempt to make that your livelihood. I think that's just something to watch for.
I say let's let it do it. I think it'll force some conversations, like I said. I think if it also creates a lot of negative stuff, it'll give us another opportunity to reinvent. And I just I'm done. I'm done with with being devalued. I'm done with treating yoga teachers as if it's a privilege that they get to work. Do you know what
Sure.
I mean? Like that is a subtext of a
And
lot of conversations for both larger places and smaller places. It's insidious, this idea that like it's a fucking privilege that you get
yes.
to come here and work. No, no.
So I will say I 100% agree with you. And then I want to put my studio owner and manager hat on and say that, you know, you are not one of these teachers, but there are teachers that have pulled shit that at any other job they would have been fired
Well, then
immediately.
they should get fired. And that's the other thing. Like treat that's the other thing. We don't have to treat yoga teachers like special starfish. Don't say things like it's a privilege for you to get a teacher and then give people like let them get away with doing really shitty things. Like that's just like it should go both ways. Like any other
Absolutely.
job, show up and do your job. Special accommodations will be made if you're a special person to the team. And if you're not and you're screwing around and you're not pulling your weight, bye-bye. Because there's 5,000 yoga teachers behind you that can be cultivated into just as sparkling a
Yes.
freaking snowflake as you.
Yes.
And at the same time, don't pretend like allowing somebody to teach for you is a great big favor because it's not. It's work. Keep it freaking clean. And it is not getting to, share your gifts and serve. It's not about serve. I don't know. That's the other thing. Like the words about service. I remember this at a couple
Oh, that
studios I taught at long
I
ago.
did not even think about that. That is such a good point.
I haven't heard this one in a while, thank God.
Oh, I still hear it.
But I remember hearing it at a very small studio I taught at years ago, and it was like, you get to do your service. This is seva.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is me working. But okay, thanks for pulling it. That's how cults work.
Yes.
Hey, come and do a bunch of manual labor. That's your way to, pay your tithing to God.
Yeah, I mean that's not as I don't I agree, I don't think it's prevalent anymore, but I definitely still hear that, how it's just like,
With work studies, it's still.
yeah. Well, I mean, I think so there's nothing wrong with bartering as long as you're clear about the barter. Like as long as the agreement is clear. Like it's a little trickier for bigger companies to do that just because they're operating across multiple states with multiple different labor laws. But like, if it's like a one-to-one thing, like, hey, Kate, you're gonna come sign in a class and that's gonna take you 30 minutes, 15 minutes before, 15 minutes after, and then you're gonna get one class for that, and the value of a class is $20. Then you've made $20 for 30 minutes. And it's just coming to you in the form of a class. You know what I mean? Like I find absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I know that it can be framed as like, this is more than just a job. And like when I have work studies, I'm very clear, like you work a shift, you get in a certain amount of classes. And it's like a very clear, like, and if you can't make the shift, like no big deal. If I really needed someone to be here 100% of the time, I would pay someone to be here. But if you're just gonna like, you know, and people always treat it more seriously than it is, and like try to find subs, and I'm like, ah, don't worry about it, it's fine. Like, well, I'll go down there and clean myself. So, you know, I don't think that the work study thing is inherently bad, especially because I got to study and do so many opportunities as a work study. But I do agree it can be framed in very problematic terms, like Seva. Like that's a tricky word to throw out there, and when really what you're doing is bartering. Because I'm all for bartering as long as the agreement is clear. Yeah, I don't know.
So I am supporting the union. I am also supporting Russell Brand and everything he puts on Instagram.
Except isn't he all about the Marianne Williamson?
Is he?
I think he might be. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, it's okay. She wasn't in the last debate. I mean, what's
But she is in the next one, I think.
Are you sure? Are you just making that up?
No, I'm pretty sure the next debate will have more people than the first debate. It'll be two nights. Because I think 11 people already qualified.
When is that?
October. Obviously support folks unionizing. I think and I've also known a lot of people, you know, including myself for a very short period of time, who have been in unions specifically around the arts. And there's ways to do it that's like supportive for everybody involved. It's not without a lot of struggle and a lot of like yelling and screaming from what I hear. But it's doable. I think what makes it tricky is how is really just the structure of the yoga business as it's existed up till now. Like, I think it might actually take some real like big structural changes to make on the business side of things to make it work for folks. And it's just so much of an unknown that I.
What do you think about transparency of wages? Sorry, I don't mean to go dovetailing. We're going to tidy this up soon, but that was one thing that I thought was interesting: transparency of wages.
No, I think you're meaning that like I know what you make and you know what I make.
Yeah,
I think that's great. I think it works better when it's a clear. Scale, like, and the scale could be taken into consideration multiple things. Like, there could be a base for someone who has been deemed to have like X amount of experience, and then a base for someone who is newer, but say that newer person has been working at the studio for twice as long as someone who just came in with more experience. It might be totally within the realm of possibility that they would end up making the same amount of things. So, you know, if I had unlimited funds behind me, I would certainly try to come up with some sort of scale of, okay, there's incentive for experience and learning more and studying more, and there is incentive for sticking around, and that is a, you know, and that everyone should be clear about what everyone else is making, and the people in charge should be able to justify what everyone else is making. Simple as that. I do think that that is a good thing. I don't know that it will happen, because I think that's hard to, I think that, do you feel, I don't know about this. Do you feel like that's harder to do when it's an attendance-based structure?
Yes, I think it's difficult to do, but it's not undoable.
Yeah. I just feel like it works much better when there's like a, when it's a like fee per class.
I mean, I like removing the micro minutiae of how many people are in here, how much is this class worth, blah, 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 blah,
Yes.
kind of thing. I think the energy is, it's one that I've mostly been able to navigate, but I do notice it, you know,
Yeah.
I notice it in how it affects my thought about my worth as a teacher or what I'm doing, you know, and I certainly see that with other teachers, however much they try to keep that at arm's length, people attribute their worth and their pedagogical value in attendance, and it's just
It's
not
not great.
true. No. So I've always been drawn to the idea of a structure that is like, you know, merit based, and it could include your class numbers, but that would also be cognizant of class times. It would also be, what
Yes.
have you done
It,
this year
yeah.
to participate? What value
Yeah.
do you bring outside of the classroom? Like have it be really clear how you get raises, when you get raises, what are things
Yeah.
that would help you get raises, and then like just even out the freaking playing field.
Yeah.
Have people come in and classes are flat rate, and part of what's built into that is the prep and the
Yeah.
breakdown time, and like everybody should just be making like $90, $100 for a
Yeah.
class. And then the people that have been at this for, you know, 5 or more years, maybe they're making a little more. But
Yeah.
just if you want it, I feel like that to me feels cleaner and
You know,
kinder.
the
And
other
like you could walk
thing.
into a class and be like, I'm gonna get paid this amount and I'm excited about this
Yes.
amount
Yeah.
because I'm excited to be at a studio that values me in this way, in
Yes.
this stable way.
So the other thing that's interesting to me that I think it was Fez was saying that, like, you know, and I think this conversation gets lost a little bit because you do have that like drop off after the like 5 year and then the 10 years teaching mark, which we've talked about, is that there are going to be times where what you are practicing and what you are interested in teaching locks in with the culture, and there is a what's the word I'm looking for? A confluence of events that causes you to have a lot of people in your class. And then inevitably, if you're practicing well and you're studying, there will probably be some future period of time where you are starting to re-examine and figure things out again. And usually that might, and typically that might cause a little bit of a lull in the attendance because you're still trying to figure things out. Like, if people are really engaged with yoga, which is I think what I would be advocating for someone who wants to be a yoga teacher for their livelihood to have, like, there are going to be moments in the teaching career where there are a lot of people in classes, and then there are going to be other moments in the teaching career where it's going to be kind of slow. And it's not that those experiences will be any less valuable or any less fulfilling unless they're valued less. You know what I mean? Like,
That was exciting.
some of the most like amazing classes I've had have been with teachers who have been teaching for like 25, 30 years, and there's like three people in the room. And like, we get to like explore and learn some new shit. And but if that is constantly valued less than doing what's popular, then we get ourselves into a little bit of a tricky situation. But if we're working within a capitalist system and we're not considering the yoga, you're just considering the bodies in the room, the number of visits per week in the case of Yoga Works, we're not, it's always going to default to that numbers game. And so, to me, like, a big part of what any union would need to advocate for is that, yes, we understand you need to keep the doors open, and we're going to stand for yoga. Like, yes, for our ability to make a living, yes, but like, we're going to actually say, like, this is the service we're offering. This is the thing that we're offering. In as, you know, broad a term as you can cultivate, this is actually why it's valuable, and this is why we should be compensated as such. If it doesn't start from that, like, this is what we're doing and this is why it's valuable, and now let's talk about the money piece of value, I think that's where the conversation can go a little bit awry. Because I do feel like that's actually the disconnect in some of the conversations I've had at YogaWorks, is like just like a fundamental misunderstanding of what the value of having a yoga class is from the business point of view.
We're so fucked.
Yes, that's great. That's a great way to end the podcast.
You know what? I'm just fucking done. I
Yeah.
just like I'm just done. I'm done. I'm done with 33-year-old white ladies.
Yep.
And I know I just described myself. I'm not 33, but I'm just,
Mean, I'm
we fucking
practically a
suck. We
33-year-old
fucking
white
ruin
lady at this
everything.
point, so.
Just all garbage. So everybody with fucking rich thinks they've got it. And I'm so bored. I'm so fucking bored of yoga teachers that have been teaching for 10 minutes, have never had anything happen to them in their lives. And are like, well, I am. How do I become a better teacher? And I'm like, go get your fucking face torn off and shoved up your ass and have something to say and then come back in the classroom. I don't want you in here until you're in your second fucking outpatient. Like, I don't want you in here until. Go fucking break your back and have your heart fucking set on fire by gypsies. I'm done.
Well, with that note,
This sure has been unrolled.
it has. Feel free to email us with questions, comments, concerns. This one might cause a bunch of them. Thank you to everybody who reached out about the podcast last week, or 2 weeks ago with Sukriti. It was very nice to hear all of your comments. Well, the website thing is still in progress. I'll let everybody know about that next time. Do you have any last words, Kate?
No, I'm fucking done.
Okay, great. Bye.
Bye.
Hold on. I can't find the button.